Ladies and gentlemen, lads and ladies, I'd like to welcome you back to the Sling the Biscuit podcast. This is going to be the new Sling the Biscuit episode 24. My name is Dave Wheeler. I am the beholder of the greatest morning show in the city of Winnipeg, top morning show in the city by far, joined by starting right bench number 33 on the ice, 69 in your heart, Mr. Travis Ridgen for the Motor City Rockers. He's fresh off hip surgery. Trav, how are you doing down there in the city of Winnipeg?
Well, you know, pooping's a little hard. I've managed to get it down to a science where I can get in and out in about 10 minutes, even as for a quick pee, but I got to sit down for everything, which is really questioning my manhood. Other than that, glad to be back in Winnipeg and looking forward to jumping on a train back out to the West Coast where the weather's better.
I think you missed one thing. It's almost as bad as recording a whole podcast and forgetting that you hit record. Or that you didn't hit record and having to restart, which we just did. But we're on take two of the podcast.
Been doing this 25 years. If I had a nickel for every time that that's happened to me, I'd probably have at least $2.
Does it actually happen a lot? In all
seasons? Yeah, it happens more often than not. There was times I was in the middle of an interview with, do you remember I, Mother Earth?
One more astronaut. I know Mother Earth. Yep.
So I'm in the middle of an interview with Edwin, their lead singer, and I've only got about 20 minutes with this guy. And about 15 minutes in, I'm like, Edwin, how would you feel about starting over? Because I did not record any of this. And he laughed and he's like, totally cool. And he was cool about it, which was awesome. But yeah, I was so embarrassed.
That's tough.
Because you're wasting people's time.
But I think that it comes back to something we talked about, you know, in one of the earlier on episodes is like when you admit that you messed up and you're like, hey, man, I'm really sorry. Like if you're going for a handshake and you give the guy a wet noodle or like you accidentally grab his like thumb and you're like, oh, God, now this is awkward for the both of us. And you're like, listen, I screwed up. I would like to do this right. Can we try this again? I think that goes a long way with people.
I did that with Kevin Glenn after a football game one time. We were at Earl's Polo Park. And I was like, hey, Kevin, good to see you, man. I went in for the handshake, and he went in for the fist bump. And so I just grabbed his fist, and I just shook it.
For those listening that don't know who Kevin Glenn is, the legendary starting quarterback for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the CFL, Canadian Football League. If you're not from Canada, you may know it also as the Cartoon Football League or the Comedy Football League. But
whoa, it's calls it that? That was fighting words.
I heard that a few times.
Listen, I know we're going to get into this later, but some of the crap that the NFL pulled over the past couple of weeks, no, that's the clown league.
Yes, absolutely. You want to, we'll save that for later because we're going to get heated and we want to keep it relatively calm moving forward. But
fine.
Speaking of, yes, calm down, Dave. Relax. Easy, boy. Easy. Well, a couple things worth mentioning right off the hop. The podcast is, I'm a broken record, and I apologize. The podcast has been growing like wildfire the last couple months since Dave joined me back in the end of July, beginning of August. And I want to say thank you to everybody for listening to the podcast, for making it possible. If you're on Spotify, Apple, the video version on YouTube, it has grown like crazy. And thank you so much for the people that have been supporting us on the Patreon page, which has gained a lot of members over the Christmas break. Thank you for, choosing to financially support the podcast. I know we're not huge by any means or any stretch of the imagination. But if you're not on the Patreon page, I just got these rookie cards printed from my time in Motor City, and I'll throw up a little graphic on the screen here in the video version, but they're these limited edition custom rookie cards with some stats in the back, which I know there's not many, but there are some stats in the back and some cool graphics in the front, and then same thing for my time in Sweden last year, graphics in the front, graphics in the back, and if you are a Patreon member, those are free. It is $5 to join the Patreon page. Pledge as much or as little as you like, and you can help support us. And we'll keep this the podcast rolling. And thank you to our amazing Patreon members from, Mark Alfred, Braden Evans, U.S. Marine, former Marine, and personal friend of mine, Rich Silva. You are the man, Rich. Gary DeVito. Everybody on the Patreon page, thank you for recently joining and supporting the podcast. And also, I hope this doesn't come across, pumping our tires too much, but I've had a couple messages from personal friends lately mentioning that the podcast has been really enjoyable to listen compared to the original version, and that they almost enjoy it better than Spit and Chicklets, which I find hard to believe because that's an absolute juggernaut of a podcast, the media empire over at Barstool. But I guess people are taking well to the podcast. We've got Jordan Bennington liking the clips we're posting of him the last couple of weeks. The Tragically Hip reshared our podcast episode earlier today. It's been a crazy last couple of weeks with this podcast with you, Dave.
Well, listen, I know we're going to get into a few topics here right off the bat, but I was half kidding off the top of the show, but I'm actually genuinely curious to know, how is going to the restroom with a new hip?
It's good. I think the best comparison would be when you're on a road trip, you go to the bathroom, like the public restroom, and that it's, that toilet has seen some disgusting things and some scary things in its time, and you put down like 10 layers of toilet paper over the seat to make your own, makeshift toilet seat, and then you get the tricep dip going, you hold on to like the holy shit handle, and then you just dip down. That's basically what I do every time, whether the toilet's clean or not. I have to do that so I'm not putting too much flexion on the hip. But outside of that, it's pretty good. I'm significantly more mobile than you would think post-hip surgery. I just got on the bike today for 10 minutes, like the stationary bike at physio.
Seriously?
True story. Do you want to get into that? We'll get into the whole hip surgery thing since we're on it.
Yeah. Like, is that you just getting too excited, or is that doctor's orders?
So that is doctor's orders. So I guess we'll start from so hip surgery. I came home, was basically a vegetable for a day, 2 days, where everywhere I walked was with crutches. I couldn't get anywhere without crutches. Going up and down the stairs was like a 10-minute ordeal. Going up like 15 steps of stairs.
Whoa. Hang on, let's start from the very beginning. So you walk into the hospital, an able-bodied human, a lot of pain in your hip, and then you meet the what hospital was it, by the way?
This is the Pan Am Clinic in Winnipeg.
Oh, great spot. Dr. McDonald's down there. Good friend. So you walk into the Pan Am Clinic just off Pembina in, or sorry, just off, what would that be? Taylor?
I think it's Taylor.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go just off Grant. Maybe between Grant and Taylor. We'll go with that. So you walk in there to the amazing staff and they say, "Hey, Travis, glad to see you have your cameras. Please set up wherever you like. We'd like to record this entire surgery."
Nope, that was absolutely the opposite of what happened. So so they brought me in. I ended up sitting in the waiting room. So they sit you down in a bed. They get you set up in all the gear, the hair nets, the whole uniform they have to give me. And I sit there for about an hour and a half waiting for them to finish at the previous surgery so that I could take over the room myself. And so one of the nurses comes in. I'm like, yes, they're going to take me in. It's time. It's, John Cena, it's time. Let's go. And she says to me, she's like, "Sir, it has come to my attention that you have a YouTube channel." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I do." She says, "Listen, I love YouTube. My kids watch it all the time. But we can't have you filming anything in here." And I said, "Why is that?" She's like, "Well, nobody signed off on any paperwork consenting to your video. So we're going to have to ask you to put them away and not record anything on the premises." And I said, "Well, what if you guys just get out of the shot and just have me in there? Like, I'll give you my phone. You could film me later." And they're like, "Well, we don't have paperwork that you consented." I'm like, "Lady, I'm telling you right now, I consent. Film anything, anything you want. I'm unconscious. I'm not going to remember it."
Right.
"And sir, I'm going to ask for your cameras here, please." Well, little did she know. So I gave her my cameras. This right here, my phone, this I used for like half the vlog. So I got lots of stuff on here, filmed everything that I needed to. They wheeled me into before they wheeled me into the room, the anesthesiist came in and says, "Hey, we're going to give you anesthesia in the actual room, but we're going to give you something just to kind of like take the edge off. Because, when you get in the room, it's a very stressful environment and we want you to be calm." And I'm like, "Okay, sure." So they give me this. And they're like, "Well, you're going to start forgetting stuff slowly from now until after the surgery. This just does that." So, okay, whatever. So they take me. I'm a little bit calmer. They wheel me into the facility on this trolley. They asked me, "Would you like to move yourself from the trolley to the station, or would you like us to?" And I said, "I'll do it, because it's going to be the last time I get to do this under my own power for a while." So I get my butt-ass naked body up, dong out and everything, all 3 inches, rock hard, and I move myself from the trolley to the station. And the people are trying to hold this blanket over me so they can't see me naked. They're like, "Sir, we want to cover you." I was like, "Listen, it's nothing you haven't seen before. I'm not ashamed. This has been seen by many, many people amongst many locker rooms in Watertown, New York. Just let's just get this over and done with and not make this any more difficult than it has to be." They sit me down. They said, "Sir."
"No, sir, honestly, we have seen it before and we definitely want to cover you up."
Is that a third ball? So.
"Sir, you anyway. have this underwear called Sheath. You should really look into it."
You really should. But I think the first indicator that you needed one was that we wanted to cover it up because it looks like a piece of cauliflower. But we'll get to that in a second. By the way, shout out to our amazing presenting sponsor from the team.
Yeah, we'll get to them in a sec.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. It's in the words of John Bon Jovi. Whoa, we're halfway there.
Yeah.
So they say to me, "Sir, we're going to give you anesthesia. You have two options. We can give you a spinal injection. It's very calming. It's very nice." And the anesthesiologist was trying to pitch me on. He's like, "I like this myself. This is how I like to get knocked out." And I said, "Well, what's the downside?" He's like, "Well, there's a very slim chance we paralyze you by accident." I'm like, nope. What's the other option? "Well, we can just put a tube down your throat. That's the one.
Yeah.
Give it to me." So I lay down and the doctor says, "This is going to happen very quickly. Just stay relaxed." And within like that quickly, the guy has this like breathing mask and he just shoves it right on my face. And I said to him, I was like, "You're making me kind of feel a little uncomfortable." And that was it. Out.
Do you remember any of it?
So I don't remember the breakdown, but the surgeon did call me a couple days ago. So he calls me up and he says, hey, I just want to give you a breakdown of what happened. So confirmed, your hip labrum was torn from the front all the way down the side. They graded that at a level 2 out of 4. So level 1 being minor, level 4 being unfixable, 3 being major. So I guess level 2 isn't that bad. The hip labrum, or the femur growth, the cam hip lesion that they call it, the doctor said it was larger than they expected, but I'm a larger man at 6'5", so it makes sense why it'd be bigger. Gave them a little bit of trouble, but it wasn't, you know, nothing too much. They were able to get rid of it and, you know, knock it all down. My femur cartilage was perfect, fantastic. You know, doc was, you know, really flattered me there, take good care of my femur cartilage. And then the pelvis cartilage was a little bit banged up, but that was basically it. But I think the best part of the whole phone call, before we got in the breakdown, doc calls me and says, yeah, I just want to let you know that it went pretty good. I thought I did a fantastic job. You know, I was really, really happy with how it came out. I thought, you know, I stitched up the labrum real nice. I put down 4 anchors, real good job, if I do say so myself. You know, your little femur lesion gave me a little bit of trouble, but, you know, we knocked it down, no problem. Real happy with that as well. I thought I did a great job. I thought I did a really good job. We did it a little bit under 4 hours. They were quoting me at 3, so it took a little bit under 4. But I thought that was like I wish that was like a post-game, like hockey interview. Like, you know what? I took the puck from behind the net. I walked everybody from Gothenburg to Stockholm. I walked the D-man, made him look silly, bent his ankles over, and I roofed it over the goalie because he sucks. Sellied, I need a raise. That's basically what he told me in surgeon format.
Well, are you happy with that? Because I certainly would be. It's a lot better than, you know, going into your mechanic shop and going, well, I did my best. I took my tie off and tied it around a few things that I wasn't quite sure if they're going to work or not. So I don't know, drive it around for a little while. If it breaks, bring it back. Or would you prefer to go into your auto body place or your mechanics and go, whoa, we fix this thing so it's like brand new. Like we are the best mechanic crew around. And then they're giving high fives. I would much take option 2 than option 1 of like, well, so I don't know if we got all that stuff off the bone and hopefully the stitches hold together. I was really hungover when I was doing your surgery. So, you know, fingers crossed, take care.
You know, Trev, listen, I got to be honest. You know, me and our surgical staff, we went out to Teasers last night. We had a little bit of a long night. You know, and I got a little bit crippled, probably a little bit more than I should have. I did not sober up. We're just trying to get pucks deep. We're trying to get them in hard. We're trying to hem them in deep. You know, we're going to bring out the big guns and hope for a big third period. And that's all I can do is just hope for the best. No, yeah.
We went to a cabaret because I wanted to remind myself. It was like practice. I wanted to see how the hips moved properly before I went in to operate on hips, you know. Had to see how they move.
That's what we want. That's what we're trying to get tomorrow for Ridgen.
Right. That's the kind of ability he needs. Get that man back on the post. That was on pole. The pole. The post.
Get that man working the corner in Watertown, New York. Or Fraser, Michigan. Sorry. But so anyway, so surgery goes well. And so apparently after they brought me back into the waiting room, and I slept for about an hour, and then I remember I woke up and, you know, the nurses were shaking my arm. They're like, sir, like, we got to go. And I told them, you know, I cussed at them. I said, no, I'm not leaving. You know, like Jordan Bell from Wolf of Wall Street. Like, I ain't leaving. I'm not leaving.
I'm not going anywhere.
You're
going
to need a wrecking ball to take me out. And so they ended up waking me up. They're like, you got to go home. And I was like, why? I was like, everybody's gone. You're the only one left in the building. It's 7:30. Let's go. And I was like, okay, fine. So at this point, this is what they were telling me, and I don't remember a lot of the stuff that was going on at this point in time, and then it slowly kind of starts to fade back like into my memory when they had me out of the building. But after the surgery, because they took my cameras, but they didn't take my phone, I started recording some clips in the clinic that I don't remember recording, and there's one of me in the nurse lady, and it'll end up being in the vlog soon. But so I got the surgery or the clip, and I'm thinking, by the way, have you ever heard of Ric Flair? And I said this to the nurse lady, and she says, no, who's that? And obviously I'm extremely high at this point in time. I'm like, well, he's the wheeling, dealing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, jet flying son of a gun. And she's like, oh, that's very nice. And I said, oh yeah. And I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. And so she ends up wheeling me out on this cart, and she's trying to like open up the doors because they have.
Tell me you have that on video, please.
I have it on video. Maybe there's a way to put it in the podcast in the video version. You'll hear the audio if you're in the car, but it'll be in the vlog soon. And so obviously the nurses, they have like passes to get into certain rooms in the hospital, and so I have this video of the lady trying to like, you know, scan the car key in, and I have my phone and I'm like, stop, And I'm like, I got it. I opened, and I told her, I opened it up like with my mind, like my mind powers. I'm opening the door.
Jedi mind tricks.
Basically, and I'm looking at the video and I'm like, how high was, like, how many drugs did they give me? And so then she's wheeling me out of the place, and I got this like cup of water, and I was like, I got my water. Woo! I guess I was watching too much Ric Flair. And then they handed me off at home, and I sent Dave a clip. My mom filmed a clip of me sitting at home. My mom's like, Travis just got home from surgery. He's really high. They fixed his hip. And then I was, I guess, pissed off. I was like, but they didn't fix my 3-inch hammer. I mean, because that, you know, they spent 4 hours fixing my hip and the hammer's not fixed. That's a real major problem. But the real, I guess, moral of the story is that whether you have a north, south, or an east, west problem with your hammer, you got to get a pair of underwear from the team at Sheath Underwear, presenting sponsor for the podcast. They've been back with the podcast since day one, since we rebooted in July. And Mr. Dave Wheeler and I are very proud to present Sheath every single week and wear them. I mean, I got them on right now. My hip's busted, but I still got a pair of Sheath on, and I'm cool, I'm calm, and I'm collected. And I'll tell you why. Sheath have the dual pouch technology, and the dual pouch is a segregated, separated compartment that holds your dick and your balls, your biscuit and your basket into two different compartments so that they breathe, they're not touching, they're not sticking to the side of your leg, they're not like clumping up on one side, kind of like a, you know, a full laundry hamper full of towels. It feels nice, it feels aerated, and their bamboo mesh technology is incredible. It is cooling, and I promise you, if you get a pair of Sheath underwear, I know the New Year's, you know, resolutions have kind of passed, but make this your new New Year's resolution. I know you forgot about your last ones, you didn't go to the gym, you haven't been eating right. Get yourself a pair of Sheath underwear, and you can do so with a link in the video description or a link in the podcast notes. The code BISCUIT 69 is going to get you 20% off, the best underwear money can buy, only at the team from Sheath Underwear.
Okay, so here's the deal. I wore my red Sheath underwear so Team Canada can thank me for their gold medal, because I didn't take those off for the entire tournament. You're welcome, Sheath. I'm sorry to my wife, and you're welcome, Team Canada.
Almost everybody won here. Almost.
Yeah, almost everybody. But going back to the clip that your mother sent, pretty sure you were cheering for the wrong team most of that game.
Yes, I did realize. So the surgery was done the night that Canada and USA were playing in the World Junior game. And I didn't realize it until after that I was actually cheering for the wrong team. I was cheering for the U.S. I was celebrating the goals and I was and everything. And I said to Dave after, I was like, I think I was cheering for the wrong team. I thought we lost 6-2. We won 6-2. I was so out of it at the, you know, from the surgery. But outside of the loopiness and everything went really well with the surgery. I'm getting mobile. I'm getting around and everything. And all things considered, I'm really happy. I mean, I'm going to Vancouver later this week with my beautiful girlfriend to set up shop full time for the next little bit after we recover. And yeah.
Now I'm curious because number one, there's different stages of recovery for different types of human beings. I mean, for a guy like me, if I went in for hip surgery, they're just like, yeah, you can probably go back to doing the radio show like tomorrow. No, a little easier as far as being able to walk down to the grocery store in Kitsilano and grabbing some food for you, probably within the next 2 weeks, I would say. But did they give you a time frame on when you're allowed to get back into the pads and start doing some butterflies?
Yeah, so skating, the goal is to have me skating by June. Now, I think they're legally required to tell me these things, so they're not like, you know, holding out like false expectations for me. But June is the goal. The surgeon did say, considering like the degree of damage to my labrum and the amount of bone they had to take off the femur, that if it was July, don't be upset. Like, July is still a good time to be back on the ice, you know, balls out skating. But I think that even if I didn't really even get an off season, didn't really get much time to, you know, train, I think just fixing the actual like hip issue, getting healthy and having this new range of motion, this extra 20 degrees of internal rotation, I think that's a win in itself.
Yeah, I would agree. And listen, I mean, you don't really have to turn on the jets until September when camps start, right? So,
and that's only if I'm going to Europe, though. So if I go to Europe, we'll be reporting sometime September, I think September 15th-ish, maybe September 1st, depending on, obviously, you know, my girlfriend, her birthday's on September the 1st, so maybe I have to report from September the 2nd, understandably so.
Is she a Virgo?
She is a Virgo, yes. She's a Virgo.
Yeah, good girl.
Also, shout out to, this is new, but shout out to her dad, Jay. She went home at Christmas time and told her dad and his brother about the podcast that, you know, Dave and I do, this podcast you might have heard of, and apparently they're listening. So, Jay, shout out to you. You got an awesome daughter. She's really funny. She's like my own personal stand-up comedian. She's so damn funny sometimes, and she makes me damn right happy, so, yeah.
Wow, you are so green. You think it's like, oh cool, I got my girlfriend's dad listen to the pilot, you must be a big hockey fan. No, he's vetting you, you dummy. He's trying to figure out, let's find out how big of a scumbag this guy is playing professional hockey all over the Inland Northwest. That's what he, that, what is his name, Jay? Is it Jay? Smart man, Jay. Smart man, from one father to another, I feel you. Nice work. And you're not wrong about him.
Trying to get better every single day here, but anyway, one side note I did want to tell. So during, right before I came back from Vancouver to Winnipeg about 2 weeks ago, the massive snowstorm blizzard in Vancouver, Victoria and I, we were walking downtown Vancouver by a waterfront station, and we were going to go for coffee, and this massive blizzard was happening. There was snow everywhere, and we saw this one girl walking down, and she was wearing like a tight skirt, and you know her jugs were hanging out. And I said to Victoria, it's like minus 10 in Vancouver, which to them might as well be minus 40 here. And I was like, how is this girl not cold? And she's like, Travis, didn't you know hoes never get cold? I was like, you know, she's got a good point. She's got a good point.
You know why? Because they have warm hearts.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
We'll leave it at that. Leave it at that. Yeah. Okay. Good point.
By the way, I want to go back to the World Juniors for a second. Connor Bedard's pretty good, huh?
I heard he's okay. I heard Bettman's going to rig the draft, though.
Jeez. Well, here's the deal. So, unless you have a CHL hockey team in your city, from Everett down to Portland, all the way out to the East Coast, you know, there's a lot of junior hockey out there, especially in the U.S. You've got a bunch here and there. Unless you have an opportunity to come him. See him play at your rink, which we've been lucky enough in Winnipeg to have him play with the Regina Pats at the Ice Cave at the Wayne Fleming Arena at the U of M campus. You got to wait for the World Junior Hockey Championships to really kind of see all of these scouts that are ranking these guys, like Bob McKenzie putting guys in different spots. And you kind of go, okay, this Connor Bedard kid, another generational talent. And they just seem to be coming out of the woodworks every year. But this kid blew my mind. Number one, it's one thing to go out and beat Eberle's record, which is a fairly new record. Another thing to go out and beat Eric Lindros' record of most points in the entire tournament. That's impressive. And then to find out that the kid's 17 years old, and he's only 5'10", and he shoots the puck like he's an 8'10" giant. That is mind-blowing to me. That kid has got skill. Now, I'm still a little questionable on a few parts of his game, but as far as a pure goal-scoring talent, I mean, the guy's not going to win the Selke anytime soon once he gets into the league, but my God, talk about a pure sniper. That's impressive.
And that 5'10" is on a good day after being on the stretch machine. Like, he's really, really, yeah, really tiny, all things considered.
So are we looking like a Paul Kariya type now? Like maybe you're not going to get a full 20 years out of this guy because he's going to get banged around a lot. Like, unless you hire a Dave Semenko or Ryan Reeves more recently, unless you hire a guy like that who's going to be his watchdog, you'll be lucky to get 8-9 years out of that guy before he's ready to pack it in.
See, I think you're asking the wrong guy, because as a goaltender, me and I think the entire goaltending world has been conditioned to believe that anything under 6'2" is not acceptable to NHL level. Like, you have to be 6'2" minimum, preferably 6'3" to 6'5" in that ballpark, and anything less doesn't work. So, like, to see a 5'9" guy succeeding like that is kind of crazy. I mean, even like a UC Saros, the, you know, 65 saves the other day. I know it's a little bit off topic, but like, you don't see a lot of small guys. For many reasons, but they're it's a big guy's game. It's a game for men.
Yeah, sure. But then you look at a guy like Dominic Hasek, who dominated. They actually called him the Dominator, and he wasn't 6 feet.
No, but that's also a different time. A friend of mine, Callie Klang, he was drafted by Pittsburgh, now traded to the Ducks organization. But he was telling me when he was going through the draft, a bunch of scouts and GM said, if you're not 6'2" plus, we don't look at you. And, you know, he's 6'3", so he's, you know, lucky to be in that situation. But I think it's the numbers game of now goaltending specifically, because obviously I'm not as knowledgeable when it comes to player stuff. But if you can have a 6 foot guy versus a 6'5" guy, when the game gets faster, the pace intensifies and guys are smarter, the 6'5" guy is going to get hit more consistently by luck than a guy at 6 feet. And it's just the reality. Like, you take up more net. I know the old sumo analogy doesn't exactly work, because you still have to be able to move that mass in position in the center of the puck, in the center of the net, to get hit. But when you're 6'5" compared to 6'1", There's just no space in today's game for guys like that. You see in minor pro, obviously in the Feds, you know where I'm at, there was actually a decent amount of guys who, you know, 6'2", 6'3". I was still the tallest goalie in the league at 6'5". But really, I'm going to say four guys, maybe under 6 feet, maybe three. There's not a lot of guys that are short even at the Fed Zeno level, and that's not the NHL.
By the way, I'd like to point out that Chaz Lucius, who scored a hat-trick in the bronze medal winning game, including the overtime winner, property of my Winnipeg Jets, baby. Yeah, 6'1", 185 from Minnesota, University of Minnesota Gopher. Yeah, let's go.
Chaz Michael Michaels is figure skating. I won a lifetime Christina Yamaguchi award. I am figure skating. Yeah, Faith Hill used to make these diaper bags for her.
Chaz Michaels Michaels also showed up in the Wedding Crashers.
Yes, Ma, the meatloaf.
Now! I don't even know what she's doing back there. It's crazy.
Funerals. The chicks are so horny. Their nature is aphrodisiac. It's not even fair. It's like fishing in a barrel with dynamite.
Anyways, Chad Lucius, property of the Winnipeg Jets. Yeah, that's awesome. Honestly, I went into the tournament thinking, all right, because we talked about this over the summer when all that stuff was coming out about Team Canada and all the sponsors pulled and whatnot. And so I kind of went into this one going, listen, I'm just going to report on it. I'm not going to, you know, sink my heart into it. But once that gold medal game came around, I was sitting there like every other Canadian in front of their television, just chewing my nails, trying to figure out why they couldn't get the puck out of their own zone and just praying that we got ourselves an overtime winner. And boy, howdy, we sure did.
You support Canada, but I was really hoping Slovakia would pull off the comeback against Canada because
it wasn't Slovakia,
Adam Guyan,
the Czechs.
The Slovak goalie. The Slovak goalie in the Slovak game, the overtime game, the 4-3 game.
Okay.
When they're getting outshot 60-20 and the game is, you know, 3-3 in overtime. If Slovakia pulled off that win, that would have been the greatest performance in World Junior history, period. Slovaks have never beaten Canada. You have this kid, Adam Guyan, who's not even playing in the USHL. He's playing in the NHL. It'd be the equivalent of a guy coming from the MJ, you know, the Manitoba Junior Hockey League, to play for Team Canada, the World Juniors, and knocking out, let's say, Team USA. But it wouldn't even be Canada versus USA. It would be, you know, a country like Slovakia versus Canada. Like, that's the equivalent. It's mind-blowing. And
that's why I love this tournament. It puts guys that you'd never think about on your radar, right?
Well, one thing that I did notice, so he committed to the University of Minnesota Duluth about 2 weeks before the tournament. Man, did he play himself. If he would have just been like, you know what, let's wait till after Christmas, everybody would have been knocking down his door trying to get a commitment out of him.
Hey, Minnesota Duluth is a great school. He's lucky to be going there.
It's a great school, but imagine what you could have got after that performance when everybody in the NCAA is knocking down your door to get a signing out of you.
Yeah, well, maybe he could have went straight to pro. Who knows?
That's true.
Maybe he could have got signed by the Motor City Rockers. One can only dream.
Let's not put that in the universe, Dave. We got some other things to worry about at this point in time. Do you want to get into a little bit of Fed Zeno talk?
Yeah, let's go. Since I brought up the Rockers, what's going on? They're still popping up in my YouTube feed.
Yes, they are. A lot of people still asking, hey, I'm at the Motor City game in Columbus, Georgia. I'm at the Motor City game in Danbury, Connecticut. Are you here, Trav? And I responded to them, no, I'm actually at home. I have a busted hip. I'm getting surgery. Have you not been following along? Oh, I didn't know. But so I'm obviously done for the season, as we've, you know, documented on the podcast and the vlog. But so the whole Motor City situation, people have been asking, well, am I going to resign in Motor City? Am I going to go somewhere else? Am I going to go back to Europe? And just kind of wanted to give a little bit of a little update for that situation. So we talked about it last podcast. So Motor City put me on season-ending injury reserve, which when you put on season-ending injury reserve, the team retains your rights. So I'm done for the season. They withhold my rights. I am still Motor City property. Now, this is, I'm not going to give my opinion on this, but so when you put on season-ending injury reserve to retain your rights, you're supposed to pay the player. If you want to own their rights, you have to pay them. They have opted not to pay me. I'm not upset about that at all. And as a matter of fact, there are somebody on this podcast, Mr. Dave Wheeler, I don't think you've ever dealt with that before. You ever had a contract where somebody's not paid you what you're owed? And you ever had that? No? No?
I hear a voice. I think it's my lawyer screaming from from miles away in downtown Winnipeg, where he's saying, we're still litigating. 5 years, going on 5 years, man. Not fun. Not, wait, yeah.
So you're trying to get $125 a week out of whoever you're?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Something like that.
Anyway, as we digress, there will be a day where we talk about that with Dave, but sure. Obviously not now. One day. So Motor City is retaining my rights as I'm on season-ending IR. They will hold my rights until, I believe, the middle of May when the expansion draft comes. Now, with the expansion draft, there's two new teams, one in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. One's supposed to be in some weird town in Virginia that I don't quite remember. I was told the guy who owns the Virginia team ran out of money, but I was recently told that apparently he's got more money now. So I don't know if somebody loaned him money or he just like found money, or I don't know what the case was, but apparently they're back in the mix. It's going to be two new teams next year. And so that expansion draft, if Motor City doesn't protect me, which I would assume they're not going to, just assuming at this point in time, that Baton Rouge or Virginia would have the rights to
pick. Well, how can they protect you if they're not paying you?
We talked about this last week.
Yeah, I still don't get it.
The Fed Zeno is the wild, wild west. And what rule book are we playing by today?
Right.
Here's, right, that's the reality of it. And I think that in the last couple of years, I've become a little more spiritual, a believer in, you know, God and the universe. Not to get too, like, you know, crazy on you, but I do believe there's a higher power watching out. And all the things that happen in Motor City and this situation specifically will even out in the wash. And with my new acquired hip or you know, less than hip, things are going to work out next season no matter where I go. I firmly believe it, and it's just God's plan. But and I think that takes a little bit of pressure off, trying to put pressure on myself to, you know, make things happen, as opposed to like they're going to happen or they're not. I'm just, you know, playing the game, and we're just trying to hope for some balances to go our way. Cliche, but it's the way that things go. So expansion draft will come by. They pick me or they don't. I'm not going to say what teams, but I have been reached out to by two teams in the Fed that have talked to me about signing for next year if Motor City doesn't. So there's a very good chance that I will be in the Fed for next season. There also is the option of going back to Europe, Scandinavia specifically, where I was so happy. Obviously, my agent and I, we have, you know, some things to discuss about that, about, you know, pay, level, where I want to go, all these types of things. But at the end of the day, I want to play hockey. I want to play at a high level. I want to start games. I want to prove my worth. And I don't do it for the money. I don't do it because I'm getting rich in the Fed. I do it because I love doing this. And, you know, somebody asked in the last podcast, do you fall out of love with the game when you have, you know, guys like scumbag Gary Gill in Binghamton, you know, not paying guys and, you know, pulling the strings for you, or, you know, the guys, some guys in Sweden or some guys in Germany not paying out contracts? Like, yeah, the business side makes you fall out of love a little bit. But I personally remind myself that, like, there's a reason why I do this, because this beats digging ditches, as somebody else in this podcast likes to say. It beats working a day job. And I love stopping pucks. It's the greatest thing on earth.
Where do you prioritize your checklist? Is it getting starts? Is it playing in front of fans? Is it money? Is it location? Is it standard of team? What is it? Like, in what order do you place things as far as the importance of where you want to play?
That's a great question, actually. So I would say in this order. So number one is the career outlook. So let's just say I'm a free agent. I've never played in the Fed. Motor City wants to sign me. Okay, well, am I going to play? Yes or no? If so, how many games? How good is the team? Is there a good defensive structure in front of me? Am I going to be enabled to succeed, or am I going to be behind 70 shots a night and be giving up 9 goals a game? Because I don't want to be giving up 9 goals a game, but it could potentially be a good opportunity to develop my game under that firepower every single night. So that's number one, first and foremost. Will I have suitable living conditions? Realistically, I can make anything work because I'm not going for a vacation. I know that, you know, Fraser, Michigan is not, you know, a hotbed for vacations, and, you know, neither are none of the other places, but that's number two. The pay really doesn't matter to me. Like, as long as the podcast is around and the vlog keeps going, I will survive financially. But the hockey side is what matters the most to me, and being happy playing the game. And then also, this is more of a recent addition, is can I bring my girlfriend and not worry about her getting shanked in the middle of the night in a crime-ridden city? That's a serious concern that I have. Like
that's
in
fair.
Fraser, this is weird. In Fraser, they don't have any night lights. Like at nighttime, there's no street lights. In all
street lights, okay, like night lights. I thought you meant like the little ones plugged into the wall in the hallway.
They don't have any night lights.
When you're walking down the street, there's no like lights. So like I was thinking to myself a couple of times walking at night, thinking if somebody wanted to whack me, it'd be so easy. And like obviously that doesn't make me comfortable, you know, bringing my beautiful girlfriend, my best friend, to come, you know, watch me play and come, you know, stay for a week. So that's also on the priority checklist. But that's basically it. I mean, I think any team is going to let me film my videos. I think any smart team knows if you bring me on the team, you're going to make money. If you bench me and or have me just practicing, you're going to lose money and lose viewership. If you have me playing games, the team is going to make a shit ton of money. Which, I mean, to bring back to the Motor City situation, I kind of confused about the whole trade situation offer and with, you know, three different offers for me declining every single time, why you wouldn't have me play games to appreciate your asset by, you know, having me sit. You've just depreciated your asset. So if, let's say, you gave me five games, you could trade me for significantly more and have a higher asking price than if you tried trading me today, where I have 44 minutes of game time. So just on a business level, that doesn't make sense, but that's all, that's how my brain works. That's what I see. So.
Yeah, well, listen, it's no different than what I've mentioned before. A lot of times the American League and the NHL has some big differences, and one of the big differences to me that I've noticed is passing. Really, in the grand scheme of things, the passes in the NHL, they're crisp, they're on the tape, and they don't miss. In the American Hockey League, you're going to have guys, and they may miss by a couple inches, which could really stop a stride. No different than the way business is run. It's going to be ran better the more you move up. And as much as the Fedzino is a development league, it's not just for the players. Sometimes it's for ownership, too. Sometimes it's for managers, too. Sometimes it's for coaches as well. Like, I mean, if they can prove that they can do well at that level, they get to move up. And sometimes they stumble in the process.
People don't realize, too, that, you know, people want to trip that, you know, there's not a lot of money. Well, guess what? You'd be tripping an SP guy for making $250 a week. You'd be tripping a guy on the coast for making under $20,000 a year. At the end of the day, we love hockey.
Is that what the guys on the coast are? Well, hang on. That's what the guys in the ECHL are making?
So this,
like, that's got to be the high-end guys.
No. So here's the deal. So in the Fedzino, the salary rules are $125 a week to $250 a week over the table. I know a guy in the league who's getting $1,000 a week. I'm not going to say who. I'm not going to say how much over and or under the table. I think that if you listen to the podcast, you can probably put two and two together. But there is guys making $1,000. I've heard there's another guy in the league making $2,000 a week. I'm just going to leave it at that. Obviously, those are under the table deals. In the SP, I believe it's $250 a week to $400 a week. That's the max. Obviously, you can do a little bit under the table as well. In the coast, I believe the minimum is $425 a week for just a coast deal, and I believe that averages out, you know, with everything else, with $21,000, it might be $20,000 even, so $20,000 US, and that's obviously before taxes. So I don't know, you're pulling up maybe $17,000, $18,000 by the time you're all said and done if you're playing the coast for a full season.
Okay, so, that sounds bad, because I heard you say $120, and I knew in the American League that some of the, you know, higher end guys, like really high end guys, were getting like maybe $200. $250 at most, and most guys are kind of floating around $60, $70, $80 a year.
Yeah, the sad thing is, if you're playing in the American League, there's a good chance you're making less than a high school teacher,
yeah,
realistically speaking.
Oh, 100%.
And you're doing it for the love of the game. You're not getting rich off it. You're not retiring early. It's because you love hockey.
Yeah. Isn't that why we all do what we do? That's why I'm here with you every week, Travis Ridgen. I don't do it for the money, man. I don't do it for the money. I do it because I love you, and I love this podcast.
You believe that? If you
want. I just got flashbacks to Tony Romo, Terrell Owens, 2007. That's my quarterback, man.
That's my quarterback.
That's my quarterback.
That's my teammate.
You can't do that, man. That's not fair.
It's not fair.
Big alligator
my co-host,
tears.
Man.
Oh man. Speaking of the NFL, really quickly, I know we want to wrap up here quickly, but you got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. You got the National Football League, one of the biggest juggernauts in all of professional sports around the world, saying they're going to flip a coin to decide a seeding. Like, come on. That's a clown show. That's embarrassing.
I'm gonna leave one comment here, and I'll leave it at that. I'll let you take it from here, Dave. There was a clip last night at the time of recording this of one of the Packers players shoving one of the medical staffs for, was it Buffalo or was it somebody else last night?
No, it was the Detroit Lions.
Detroit Lions. So, yeah, one of the medical staff was out there. I don't know what, for whatever reason, one of the Green Bay guys shoves the medical staff when he's trying to help somebody. In professional hockey, at least, the way that it works, your equipment staff and your medical staff are like Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
like,
they're
gold.
Don't
question them. They're literally gold. You tip them out at the end of the year. You say thank you. Like, they have more power than you believe. Like,
totally.
If our shout out to our equipment trainer in Motor City, Seth. If he comes up to our GM and says, listen, Trav's a scumbag, get rid of him, they're getting rid of me. It's simple as that. So you treat those people like gold, and you treat them with class. To shove the other team's medical staff, I don't know if it was an accident or in the moment. I know I saw a clip of the guy. He was crying before he even got off the field because I think he realized what he did. But, like, dude, you got to give your head a shake. Be a professional. You can't do that kind of stuff.
I get it. And I don't know what the context was. I don't know if they've had beef. The players, honestly, after a guy goes down, you just go back to your bench. You shouldn't even be allowed to hang around. That should be a general rule. But I just want to go back to the whole DeMar Hamlin thing. I know it's a couple weeks old right now. But and I know this may sound controversial a little bit. And hear me out for a second before you jump down my throat and say I'm an insensitive a-hole. After DeMar Hamlin hit the turf and went down, everyone went, oh, good, geez, like that's something really serious. Nobody really knew what it was. He had to get defibbed on the field twice. And so we obviously know it's something cardiac. So they managed to get his heart going again, got him in the ambulance, got him out of the hospital. At that point, they decided to be like, hey, everyone go back into the locker room. Take a few moments. We're going to come back and finish the game. The fact that they didn't finish that game, I think, was such BS posturing by the league
to be like, oh, well, listen, you know, because of the situation with him being ambulanced off the field, we just thought, in poor taste to continue on the game.
That is the worst virtue signaling I have ever seen. You got Tua Tagovailoa, the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa. I think I'm saying that right. Really tough Samoan name. Anyways, heck of a quarterback. Young rising star. They pull this guy off after they think he has a major concussion. They go, hey, man, how many fingers am I holding up? And he says, green. And they say, good enough. Get him back out there. So you can't tell me that the league's like, the league made a good call there because of the situation of the player that was on the field. Meanwhile, they're sending guys back out who have got major concussions back out on the field. And then after he gets concussed again, they're like, maybe we should hold him off the field for a week or so. You know, just to see if he can count his own toes. And then to cancel a game and then to resort to, well, since we canceled the game because we're so good and we care about our players so much, we're going to do a coin flip because we feel that's just really safe. That is some of the dumbest. You talked about bad business being run in the Fed Zeno as far as how to handle players. That was dumb from what is supposed to be the absolute gold standard about how you run a league in the National Football League. Brutal.
People love professional sports because it's entertainment. People want to be entertained. But the reality is, whether we're talking the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, or where I play in the FPHL, the Fed Zeno, we are all assets. We are meat on a hook. We're just meat sticks, essentially.
Yeah.
And the league, the owners, the people who are the gatekeepers don't give a shit about us. Me, I got hip surgery. The second I needed hip surgery, I ain't useful anymore. They don't want to pay me.
Bye-bye.
DeMar Hamlin, they virtual signal that, listen, we care. We're going to sell merch because, you know, the guy was hurt. Trust me, the first thing that came up in that office, in that management's room, was how are we going to replace him? Who's going to play that position next week? The Tua situation in Miami, we don't give a shit about that guy's health. We need wins. We need this guy to throw the ball. They don't care. All this virtual signaling in professional sports, I wish that they would just get rid of it. All these jersey nights and all these, you know, celebrations for these like crazy woke left political movements in the NHL, I'm sick and tired of this shit. Because all it is just a way for them to make money. Listen, we care. We pretend to care when in reality, the real issues are not getting solved. The money that is being made by the league and the teams are not going to solve anything. Do you not think the Toronto Maple Leafs, if they wanted to get clean drinking water for reserves up in northern Alberta, they could fix that? Absolutely, they could.
Listen, there's a reason why they call them promotional nights, because they're promoting their team to try and get more people to come to the rink or the stadium or the arena or whatever it is to put your butt in the seat so you'll buy more hot dogs and beer. Period.
You have stuff like that, and then you have federal legend Joe Pace trying to make shootouts at the end of warmups to get you in earlier, to buy popcorn and to buy beer before the game starts so that you're drinking, you have more popcorn, you're thirstier, you're drinking more beer after that. Like, by the way, I would like to state just for the record, not to get too far carried away, I've heard a lot of nasty stories in the Fed Zeno from Dirtbag Gary in Binghamton taking guys' checks, and when he got fired the other week, taking all the brownies with him. The guy's like 300 pounds, by the way, if you didn't get that joke. To all the other stuff in the Fed Zeno. Joe Pace, I have heard a million stories about. I have never heard one negative bad thing about Joe Pace. I've only heard that he takes care of guys, and he is the guy you want to play for. This guy is 41 years old. He's got three kids, by the way, Dave. Not one. He's got three kids and
nice.
A wife. Player, owner, coach, and he blocks more shots than anybody else in the league. He's league leader in block shots, so I'm told, by the Mississippi Seawolves. That's the guy I want to play for. Mm-hmm. I want to play for Joe Pace, not the guy in Binghamton who's cutting guys' checks and taking people's money and, you know, pulling the strings, doing a little dance.
Hard to soar like an eagle when you're flying around with turkeys, huh? All right, let's shut this down before we get in any more trouble, all right?
Yeah, we should. One last thing I wanted to leave you with before we cap off for the week. So we mentioned that I was going to be going from Vancouver to Winnipeg to get my surgery, and then Winnipeg back to Vancouver. We talked about, you know, train versus plane and all the pros and cons last week. You mentioned that I should get somebody to spot me for the duration of my trip.
Yeah.
So I submitted all my paperwork to VIA again. So the VIA Rail in Canada is the train network in Canada. And I was going to be taking the 2.5-day train from Winnipeg on this Thursday. It's about a 2.5-day trip from Winnipeg to Vancouver. And so I bought a berth sleeper. I think it was about $1,000 discounted, 50% off for $500. It might have been like $470 or something. And I submitted all my medical documents from the surgeon, and they gave me an upgrade. They upgraded me to a private cabin for two, which is a $3,000 cabin, all for my $475 ticket. So I have electrical outlets. I have a laying flat bed. They're going to hook me up with room service. They're going to have somebody bring me my meals if need be. When I get to the station on Thursday, they give me a number to call, and the baggage department is going to come. They're going to bring out everybody. They're going to wheel me into the center. They're going to check me in. They're going to wheel my bags in. They're going to wheel me up to the train. They're going to take care of me, which is awesome. A shout out to VIA. And that was all squared away. Then they called me back the other day. They said, "Sir, do you have somebody to give you to be like your caregiver and help you with some things that we can't help you with?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And they're like, "Well, helping you shower and helping you, you know, do personal stuff." I was like, "Oh, I never thought about that. Can I bring somebody?" They said, "Yeah, you can bring anybody you want. Just let us know and we'll pencil it in." So I call up my beautiful, stunning, smartest woman in the world, Victoria. And I said, "Honey, do you want to come on a train trip with me and be stuck with me for 2.5 days in the train?" She said, "Well, at work." I said, "It's okay. I'll get you a plane ticket. You come fly here and then you can join me on the trip." So she says, "Sure." She booked the time off work. She's going to fly here on Thursday and she's joining me on the trip. So for $470, VIA gave me a $3,000 cabin for two, meals included, shower, private bathroom, private shower, everything, and a spot for my woman for a 2.5-day trip. Shout out to VIA. It's going to be awesome.
Okay, and I'm excited. Gets to meet mom. Come on.
She does get to meet my mom.
That is so cool. Tell your mom I said hi, by the way. While you're, do me a favor. While you're on the train, you can download a brand new podcast. It's actually an old podcast, but it's a new podcast. Season 4 just dropped of the Wheeler After Dark podcast that I do with my amazing wife, who you met on this podcast a few weeks ago, and one of my best buddies, the Sad Jaguar. Not for the light of heart. It's got the E tag on it for a reason. Don't recommend it for kids under the age of maybe 16. But yeah, check it out. It's called the Wheeler After Dark Pod. So there's Wheeler in the Morning. That's the radio show. Wheeler After Dark. That one's once a week, and you can get download that every Monday after dinner.
And your morning radio show, where do you work again, Dave?
Remind everybody. Energy 106 every morning, 6 to 10 a.m. Central. You can download that on your favorite podcast platform, Wheeler in the Morning.
Yes, and just a reminder to everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, we do a new episode every Sunday. We'd love to see you out for the next Spotify, Apple, Google Podcast, or YouTube video version. If you're on the video version, subscribe, hit the like button, leave a comment. Let's talk. Let's start a conversation. We'd like to hear from you how you're liking the podcast moving forward. Leave a review on the Spotify and the Apple. It takes a couple seconds. I know Dave is big on the reviews, and we'd love to have you do a review. If you want to join the Patreon page, it's $5 a month to sign up and to start, and we got some perks coming up. Shout out to our amazing team, the team of Sheath Underwear, for the presenting sponsor. And there's a new episode every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. in Winnipeg, 9 a.m. in Calgary, 8 on the West Coast, which is Vancouver. I'm going to be in Vancouver next week full-time till September. So 8 a.m. on the Pacific Coast and 11 p.m. in China. Mr. Dave Wheeler, it is a privilege and a pleasure doing this podcast with you. Thank you to everybody for listening. And I cannot wait to see you next week for my new podcasting studio, my new apartment in Vancouver, my beautiful girlfriend, and joined by Mr. Dave Wheeler. We'll see you then.
Enjoy the chain ride.
Welcome back to Slinging the Biscuit, ladies and gentlemen. This is Travis Origin for the Motor City Rockers coming at you from Vancouver, British Columbia. Thank you, Dave Wheeler, take it away. And guess what? His girlfriend is very sick of hearing it because she thinks get a new phrase. Buddy, this one's getting old.
Welcome back to the Slinging the Biscuit podcast. This is Travis Origin. I'm coming at you live from Vancouver, British Columbia. In my girlfriend's apartment.
From our apartment, thank you.
This ain't our apartment.